2020. My name is Sean Denniston. I'm the chair of the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission. You should be able to see tonight's meeting agenda on your screen. If you can't see the screen and have joined by phone only, we will be announcing the agenda items as we move through the meeting topics. Due to COVID-19, regular meetings and public hearings of the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission will be held in a virtual meeting room. This will allow for safe participation by commission members, staff, and any citizen interested in attending. Members of the public and applicants have joined as an attendee, which means that you can see and hear the event if you joined via computer or mobile device, or you can hear the event if you joined by phone. Other event participants cannot see your video and cannot hear your audio unless you are acknowledged by the commission chair or staff and are unmuted. This evening's agenda is planned as follows: roll call and introductions, minutes approval, public comment, public hearing on the nomination to the Clark County Heritage Register for the Kellogg House, public hearing for the nomination to the Clark County Heritage Register for Melvin's Men's Shop / Wolf Radio and Electric Building. And then we have committee updates and new business, old business, and adjournment. So before, we'll do roll call first, and we'll start with a roll call of the HPC members who are present for this meeting. Commission members, please say "I'm here" after I call your name. Donald Trost.
I'm here.
Michelle Kapitanovich.
I'm here.
Andy Gregg.
I'm here.
Feli Garcia let us know that she is feeling ill, and so she is excused tonight. Gregg.
I'm here.
Julie Bon.
I'm here.
And of course, I am Sean Denniston, and I am here. Before we move to motion of the minutes, I would like to suggest that we make an alteration to our agenda, considering that Feli is not here. Under our old business, we have an update on the 2020 Cultural Resource Summit that she was going to give, which of course she cannot give. And we were also going to discuss the formation of a subcommittee to look at underrepresented communities, which she was very interested in doing, and I think we would benefit to have her as part of that conversation. So I would suggest tabling those two items for next month so that we can address them fully as they deserve. I guess, Jackie, do I have to make a motion on that, or does someone have to make a motion?
I move that we table those two items for the January meeting.
There we go.
Don Trost seconds.
All right. I guess I'll do the roll call vote. So, is there any discussion of the motion just for form's sake? All right, and we'll move on to the vote. So, Don?
Aye.
Michelle?
Aye.
Andy?
Aye.
Gregg?
Yes.
Julie?
Aye.
And Sean votes aye as well. So we will make that change to our agenda. And now we will move into the approval of the meetings. I will take a motion for approval of the November 4th meeting minutes. Please say your name when you make a motion and second. Everyone's so shy tonight.
Don Trost moves the approval of the minutes as submitted.
Andy Gregg seconds the motion.
All right. So we will take the votes, the roll call vote. Julie?
Aye.
Sean, I vote aye. Gregg?
Yes.
Andy?
Aye.
Michelle?
Abstain. I missed the meeting.
All right. And Don?
Aye.
All right. It passes with 5 aye votes and 1 abstention. So the next item on our agenda is to allow for public comments. This is for public comment on any items not on tonight's agenda. Please keep remarks brief and to the point. We have 1 attendee. So Jackie will provide instructions on how to make public comment for those joining us through their computers and those joining us by phone. Jackie?
Hi, Holly. She's our public tonight. She probably knows, but I'll read it to her. For attendees using their computer or WebEx, if you'd like to speak, please utilize the raise hand icon. You can do this by clicking on the participant button or icon, depending on the device you're using. Staff will only acknowledge those attendees during the public comment period who have raised their hand by selecting the hand icon. When you're acknowledged, you will be unmuted. Holly, would you like to say anything today, tonight?
All right, well, seeing no public comment, we will proceed to our next agenda item. I will note that on our two nominations tonight, I made substantial contributions to one of them and consulted on the other. And I will also need to recuse myself for the discussion that will be following that on the SEPA comment period for the Providence Academy. So I'll be handing the meeting over to Andy to take us through those three agenda items. Andy, go ahead, and Jackie, you can go ahead and demote me.
Okay, we'll see you soon.
Well, actually, I'll stay a panelist because I am part of the nomination. I don't get demoted yet.
Okay. Let's see, let me get Mark's presentation loaded here. Okay, take it away, Mark. Or I guess, Andy, I'm sorry, you have to open the public hearing.
You're muted, Andy. I think I can't hear you.
All righty. Again, good evening, everyone. I'll now open this online public hearing on the topic of a nomination to the Clark County Heritage Register for the Kellogg Building. The steps involved in the hearing process are shown on the slide. Other than Sean, have any other commission members have any ex parte conflicts of interest? Seeing none, we'll now have the staff report at this time. Go ahead, Mark.
Great, thank you. Acting Chair Greg, rest of the commission, good to see you tonight. We're gonna start with the Kellogg Building here. You should have in your materials a staff report from the meeting date of today, December 2nd. Go to the next slide, Jackie. So the Kellogg House is located here south of Image Lane and about the 9500 block just north of the Columbia River, south of the tracks there. So we received a nomination for a local register. We have the nomination and the signed application, and the site is not currently on a historic register. So under our code 17.39, the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission has the responsibility for reviewing matters of historic preservation within the city of Vancouver, and on local nominations is the decision maker. So I will have recommendation at the end here, but the decision is with this commission. The nomination identifies the applicable Clark County Heritage Register criterion 1 and 5. Criterion 1 is that the site is associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of national, state, or local history, and criterion 5 is that the site's association with the lives of persons significant in national, state, or local history. And I think we can maybe advance, Jackie.
Okay.
I've included some photos. I also have about 90 more photos that I'm going to try to get to the group to so we can have on file at some point, but we can also bring those up if there are any questions. Typical with these commission, I just take out this portion from the nomination. So really, I try to just summarize a little bit of what's been nominated. But really, my portion, like always, is the process. If there are questions, excuse me, about the details of the nomination, I'll defer to the experts here who are on the line. But in short, I'll skip to the rest of the process here. The review criteria for the proposal are listed in our VMC 1739. Any building, structure, site, object, or district may be designated for inclusion in the Clark County Heritage Register if it meets these criteria. And I think I have those on the slide as well, Jackie, if you want to advance one more. Yes. Basically, if it's 50 years of age or older, has integrity of location, design, settings, is significantly associated with the history, architecture, archaeology, engineering, or cultural heritage of the community, and meets at least one of the criteria that I referenced before. And this, the nomination again lists that it's the site is associated with events and the lives of the people that have lived there. So in a very, very small nutshell, because of the Kellogg family and the their company, which Northwest Copper Works, I believe, sounds like it was very influential in the community, in the region, actually, during its time. Staff believes that this nomination meets the criteria and recommends that the commission place the Kellogg House on the local register. And I guess the next slide is just my recommendation. So with that, I am open to any questions on, again, mostly process. Leave most of the structure and nomination questions to the applicant, most likely, as they're the subject experts in this case.
Do any commission members have questions for Mark?
That is just done then for me.
None for you?
Andy, I have one question. This is Julie.
Julie, go ahead.
So one thing about the Kellogg House is that the first portion of it was built in the 1960s, I believe, and the second portion was built in the 1990s. So is this nomination for the full building, or is it just for that original part of the structure? And if not, I mean, if it is, how does that work for the part that then wouldn't be on the register? Because I'm not clear, because the second part of the house doesn't meet the 50 year criteria. I know it meets the other part, but I just was curious how that works.
That is a good question, Commissioner Bond. I hadn't considered that. I guess I was looking at it as a whole, and I don't know if it's possible to only designate the original portion, but I would imagine Brad and team may have some more details for us on that. But yeah, I was looking at it as a whole.
Brad, would you like to?
Yeah, would you want me to comment on that right now or wait till?
Yes, please.
So we were looking at, so it kind of gets into the presentation of what we were going to provide, is that the focus of it is on the site, and obviously the 1960s portion is the original, and then there's been additions to the house, which many structures have additions in the natural life of a structure. So the reason that we're, you know, kind of focusing on is the history connected to the Kellogg family. And that's why we didn't select the architectural portion as a piece of the nomination. And we focused on number one and number five as the nominating factors. And we've provided a really, a very detailed examination of the architecture for future reference, and also for just the reference of the commission to see the natural life of this structure and site. But our focus is on the history of the site being the nominating factor. And so it would be the entire site that would be under the nomination. And again, it's just additions to the original structure would be kind of that consideration that we've presented.
Thank you, Brad. That helps.
I do have a question, Andy, for Brad.
Don.
So structures I'm familiar with that have been nominated, like to the National Register of Historic Places for their architectural mm-hmm. significance, you then get involved in questions about further remodeling, renovations, etc. How would that apply to a building like this, which is not being nominated because of the building, but is being nominated because of the people who live there, etc.? Would that have less effect on their ability to remodel, renovate, change, etc.? Or how do you see that working?
So I couldn't speak, empirically about the process or the law, because I'm not familiar with that particularly. But my understanding would be that once it's nominated, it's going to fall under all the appropriate design review requirements for any structure on the register, regardless, because even say a site like Summit Grove, which is on the local register, which does have additions that are more recent, to site one that we can talk about in a real world case, that site is not going to be allowed to be changed. Even the house that they are the shed that they added to the site was under consideration because it was the site that was nominated. So my impression would be that it would fall completely under the similar design reviews. And then also we could look at sites like Parkersville, which has been put on the register too, which will have updates to the park and would be adherent to the same design review standards of any structure, regardless of the age of other portions of that structure.
Thank you.
Yep.
Good answer. Thank you.
I can add a little bit to that.
Go ahead, John.
I think that it's easy for us to get, since so many of the buildings that usually end up on registers are there for architectural significance as either part or the whole of their significance, we get used to evaluating their significance that way. But for a site like this, where it's the association with the people, we would still go through the same process of looking through, well, it wouldn't be me at that point, but, the commission would still go through the process of looking at what it is that is significant about the site and how proposed alterations would impact those significant elements. And so with a site like this, we are talking about the significant family is the family that built both the original and the alteration and the addition. And so that becomes, part of what is significant about the site, is that this building, while it may not be significant for its architectural qualities, it is significant for being the home built by this family. And that would become the basis for making a determination of the impact of any kind of alteration on significant elements of this site. So it would just take a little bit of a mental shift. But ideally, it wouldn't take that mental shift, because that's how the commission should be thinking about these things in general, is what is significant about the site and how does an alteration impact those significant elements.
And I can weigh in a little bit too. I mean, it'll still, any changes, I mean, per our code, no person shall construct any new building or structure or reconstruct, alter, restore, remodel, et cetera, without a certificate of appropriateness, either staff level review if it's repair and a minor item, or commission review. But I was going to say Chair Denniston, but you may be applicant Denniston at this point. Pointed out, hopefully we can look at it and say, well, we're not reviewing this because of the architectural. So if they're making these changes, hopefully that will be a more straightforward review at that time.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions from commission members? Seeing none, We'll now open the public comment period related specifically to the Kellogg Building. Please note that if you wish to retain the ability to be a party of record on this matter, or to challenge or defend any decision made on this matter, please state and spell your name and provide your mailing address or email address for the record. And Jack, you'll provide us with some instructions here.
Thank you, Andy. For attendees using their computer or WebEx application, if you would like to speak, please utilize the raised hand icon. If you can do this by clicking on the participant button or icon, depending on the device you're using. Once you click on that, you will see the raised hand icon. If you could click on the raised hand icon to indicate that you would like to speak, we will unmute you and you'll be able to provide your public comment.
So staff may now respond to testimony from the applicant and the public. Are there any members of the public who wish to participate?
Vice Chair Gregg, I have a point of order. That the applicant's presentation, doesn't that come before the public comment? He answered a question, but I don't think he was able to give his presentation.
Oh, okay. So, So Brad, did you want to continue additional testimony?
Yes, I would like to.
Go for it. I'm sorry to have skipped that.
No worries at all. So I just want to thank the commission again for the opportunity to bring this site, before everyone, and really try to, just discuss the important story that is connected to this structure. And, one of my points of the presentation was going to discuss the points of architecture that we've already discussed. So I will skip over that part for just time sake, but note it a little bit. But this house is very interesting. And again, we're reaching into the mid-modern structures I think I was before you last year with the Fort Vancouver Regional Library. And so these are unique in how we're presenting these because they're just now reaching this eligibility point for the register. And for us, we felt our case when re-examining this structure that there were two important historical themes or points that really came out that related to both local and regional history. The first one would be the self-made industrialist or entrepreneur, which is something that is very prominent in Clark County and the area. And many of these people who came, such as the Hiddens, the Schofields, Dubois, Bratleys, Dr. John Brower of the Vancouver Clinic, and many others, came in and essentially established a business from scratch and built their industries or built their businesses over time. And Charles Kellogg is representative of this same pattern and wave of history in Clark County. And there was an early period in which a lot of these industrialists were very localized. But then as we moved into the mid-century, many of these people started to branch out and Portland became opportunity for people to do this. And so with his work at Northwest Copper, as he worked his way up through the Albina shipbuilding company as, an employee and then eventually becoming a larger part of that during World War II, then being able to get into the Northwest Copper Works and becoming the president and then passing down that family legacy to his son, Charles Jr. This was a very significant person, both in the region and to Clark County in the work that he did in the company that he helped build over time. And then the other piece of the history that we felt was really significant is that we have been, as the museum and other people in the community are starting to really examine the landscape of Clark County and the development of neighborhoods and the patterns of where people chose to live, we found that in the early portion of Vancouver history, the downtown corridor, especially on the west side, was very significant in a place for people to live who were business owners. And we saw a pattern originally where many of these people lived towards the southern end of Main Street, and then eventually they started to move more north as transportation expanded and that ability to be able to have your business and your home more separated. But what we really saw was in the 1950s with the initiation of urban renewal renewal, you started to see these different rings of development when it came to affluent Vancouverites moving out towards the east and along the river. And the Kellogg home is emblematic of this pattern and this movement. And other industrialists, entrepreneurs, and business owners were living in this same area as Mr. Kellogg was and choosing to build their homes in here. So as a kind of an event around this expansion and movement of the population, Mr. Kellogg's house is very representative of that. And so those were the two pieces that we felt were, you know, really important and helped to establish the significance both in Clark County and the region for the Kellogg House. And, you know, as you've all been able to read, Mr. Kellogg's life is one that is similar to many people that came to Clark County. The family started in the Midwest and then eventually moved a number of times and then established themselves in the local area. And he was able to build his business over time, you know, independently of any family wealth or anything of that nature. And so for that reason, we feel very strongly that this is an ideal house to be placed on the Clark County Heritage Register for that. And then the last piece also is, you know, not to get too contemporary, but the current occupants of the home, they are significant holders of historic buildings, and they have themselves nominated and got registered a number of buildings in Clark County. And so they're huge advocates for preservation. And obviously we can't write the history of the future right now, but their significance can't, you know, can't be understated, especially in the field of preservation and care for buildings in here in Clark County through what they've gotten registered. So yeah, I appreciate your thoughts and your consideration of this important site.
Thank you, Brad. Are there any further questions or comments from the commission or the public? Is anybody waiting to participate?
No hands are raised. We can give our participants in the audience a couple minutes to raise their hand if they would like to make comments. Again, you click on the participant button to find the raised hand icon and click on that to raise your hand.
Okay, hearing no none. Hands are raised. The public hearing is now closed and the commission will debate. The commission must make findings that either agree or disagree with the staff's findings on each criteria or make specific comments on any finding. At the conclusion of our deliberation, we will take a vote on the Kellogg House nomination. Any comments?
Sorry, Andy. I was just, right. You were saying, sorry, just that I agree with the nomination, basically, is what I was going to say. The only thing that I am unsure about is, do we need to have the nomination clarify that the part of the house fits criteria one and two, but only another part of the house fits criteria? I'm sorry, not two. I think it was five or six. I don't have it in front of me. I don't know if that's necessary or not. So if it's not necessary,
go ahead. I think according to the way Brad and Sean explained it, that it's that enough criteria are met that the Kellogg House could be approved as the nomination is written.
Okay.
So at this time, I'll now accept a motion, including the finding. Please say your name when making a motion or a second so the staff can capture it for the record.
So I'll make a motion that we approve the nomination of the Kellogg House. This is Michelle. Approve the nomination of the Kellogg House to the Clark County Historic Register.
Thank you. It's been moved.
This is Don. I'll second.
Sorry, Don.
It's been moved and seconded. It's been moved and seconded that the Kellogg nomination be accepted on the register. Jackie, will you please take roll call to approve this motion?
Andy Gregg.
Aye.
Don Trost.
Aye.
Greg Fuse.
Yes.
Sean Denniston. Oh, sorry. Never Don mind.
That's right.
Julie Bond.
Aye.
Michelle Kapitanovich.
Aye.
Okay. That is 5-0.
The motion to list the Kellogg House has been passed unanimously. Congratulations. We're moving on to our second public hearing, nomination to the Clark County Historic Register for the Melvin's Men's Shop Wolf Radio and Electric Building. I will now call to order this public hearing on the topic of the nomination to the Clark County Heritage Register for Melvin's Men's Shop Wolf Radio and Electric Building. The steps in the hearing process are shown on the slide. Do any other commissioners have any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest?
No.
Mark, would you please give a summary of the staff report and recommendations?
Will do, thank you. Again, Mark Persons, senior planner. I should have said that in case any folks were dialing in. I want to be better about identifying ourselves. This is Melvin's Men's Shop, located at 901 Main Street. Can we get the next slide? Jackie, thank you. I've highlighted there at the corner of 9th and Main. Consent for nomination and designation to the Clark County Heritage Register has been signed by the owner in this case, and the subject site is currently not on a historic register. The historic name is Melvin's Men's Shop, Wolf Radio and Electric. And under Vancouver Municipal Code and Ordinance M3243, the Clark County HPC has a responsibility for reviewing matters of historic preservation within the city of Vancouver and is the decision maker on matters of placing sites, buildings on the local register. So I have a staff report here that I will go through at a high level and recommendations to the commission. Similar to the previous nomination, this has been copied verbatim from the nomination itself. In this case, we do have the architectural element in addition to, we'll scroll down to the main criteria. The nomination identifies, the criteria 2, 4, and 5. So 2 is that the site embodies the distinctive architectural characteristics of a type, period, style, or method of design and construction, or represents a significant and distinguishable entity whose components may lack individual distinction. Criterion 4 is that it exemplifies or reflects special elements of the county's history. And criterion 5 is that the site is associated with the lives of persons significant in national, state, or local history. And again, staff has reviewed the criteria here on the staff review and comment. Again, this site is at least 50 years old. It was constructed in 1934. It includes distinctive architectural characteristics of the period, and it's associated with Morris Wolf and Melvin Shavvek. I know I butchered that. Do you have some help for me there?
Yes, it's pronounced Shavvek.
Shavvek, thank you. Two influential figures in Vancouver's history, particularly in regard to the retail location and the involvement of Mr. Shavvek in the Jewish community, as was very eloquently detailed in the nomination. So based on that, staff is recommending placing Melvin's Men's Shop on the local register. And again, I'm here for any procedural questions and would love to defer specifics to the experts as needed.
Thank you, Mark. Do any members of the Historic Preservation Commission have questions for Mark? Hearing none, would the applicant like to provide additional testimony? Mr. Richardson.
Yes, we would definitely like to provide a presentation. And I'm going to, well, first, again, want to thank you for the second opportunity to talk about and have another structure considered for the Clark County Heritage Register. So this building, we feel both the architecture and the history associated with it are significant and make it appropriate for the Heritage Register. And I'm going to go ahead and defer to Commissioner Denniston or Mr. Sean Denniston for a description of the architectural significance. And then after that, I will provide the historical context for the site. So I'll let Mr. Denniston speak now.
All right. Thank you, Brad. This is a really interesting building, and this is one we have included it for the architectural significance. And there's two elements of the architecture that I'd really like to highlight. One is the architectural aesthetic, and then the other is the architectural typology, because they're both significant in this case. So starting with the architectural aesthetic, this belongs to the movement known as Romantic Eclecticism. And so this was, wouldn't really call it an architectural style, although some people do, but it can be thought of as this gathering of architectural elements from around the world and adapting and adopting them for buildings in the United States in the 19th century and early 20th century. Yes.
Sean, for my notes, would you please repeat what you called that style?
Romantic eclecticism. And this would be differentiated from historical eclecticism by kind of the whimsical use of the source material and how it was, you know, just kind of hodgepodge together as opposed to kind of a real academic approach to trying to do a true revival. And so in this case, we see kind of a Spanish colonial aesthetic really just applied to a very non-Spanish colonial building. And we can see that through, we've got the little tile parapet roof at the top. We have the choice of brick, which is one of the other things that makes this building stand out. This use of this tan, it's called a ruffle brick, as opposed to either a hand press or formed red brick that is typical of Vancouver, that the hidden bricks that really typify so many buildings in Vancouver from the 19th century. And, you know, that gives kind of the adobe look or the stucco texture to it. It's still brick, but it kind of evokes these things from the Spanish colonial. And there's, you know, nothing really distinctive about the design as being this, you know, tremendous Spanish colonial, but just the fact that this romantic eclecticism was used in Vancouver is in and of itself significant. And this is a really typical example of romantic eclecticism. These elements applied to a building that is really being driven by something else. And that something else in this case is kind of this single story commercial Main Street building. And one of the reasons that this is significant is because it had a very narrow window of construction in Vancouver. And so we see through the 19th century, you know, the late 19th century and into the early 20th century, a lot of your basic commercial buildings would often be two stories, ground floor commercial, and then either office or residential above. And that was kind of the standard typology. But then as the economics of downtown began to change, they were able to make an economically viable building with just one story and get rid of all the complications of having that second story. And that's what we see here. But that window is brief before we begin to see taller buildings as the economic, you know, commercialization and densification downtown Vancouver continues. We don't see many of these single-story buildings unless they're more monumental, you know, really high buildings like banks, and we see that they give way to multi-story buildings. We have this brief window when we've got this single story commercial, and this is really, it's a great example of it, because it shows we have these bays that are very flexible. And with the introduction of structural steel into these walls, you can have large openings that you couldn't have before, which allowed for very large display windows, allowed for these businesses to engage the street in ways that the 19th century buildings really couldn't. Even if they had a display window, they couldn't get this size, but also provided a flexibility that you didn't have before, because these bays could be changed. They could be turned from display windows into entrances. So in the case of this, we've got three bays. This could have been three businesses or one business, and there's a flexibility to the space inside that really wasn't possible before. And that's from the engineering advancements. And this is such a great example of that, even how the corner kind of backs away from the corner to create, you know, a little entrance vestibule for it. That's that flexibility that's afforded by this architectural typology. And I think that this is a really great example of the changing character of Vancouver specifically, and how its character changed in the early 20th century. I think that this fits into a series of nominations that we're seeing recently, and we can thank Brad for a lot of them, that are telling the architectural history story of Vancouver in a way that isn't just, and this is a Queen Anne, or this is a Victorian, and you know, it's this style, but buildings that really speak to the specific architecture and development of Vancouver. And I think that this really fits into this, and you know, and definitely significant for those reasons. So Brad is going to tell you about the history, which I think also kind of stands on its own.
All right. So the history connected to this site, as we, you know, every time we have the opportunity to examine a building for the register, we always get to try and look and unpack what is the story that this is telling. And one of the things I guess I want to comment on initially is that this story is one I think that's a little different than the other stories we've typically told with buildings on the register. There's a traditional narrative that has come, you know, with whether being kind of a pioneer focus is something that we talk about very often, or, you know, industrialists, a lot of times people doing, you know, similar things in Vancouver. And, you know, many of the nominations that we see, we don't see a lot of diversity in, you know, people that are being represented. And this site is interesting because it is represented by two leaders of the Jewish community that came early in Vancouver. And, you know, when looking at sites that we've already nominated, you know, this relation to the growing during this period Jewish community, and also the now long established Jewish community in Clark County, hasn't been represented in any of the nominations to the register. And the two individuals that we see this story being carried by is Morris Wolf and Melvin Shevick. And when we began to examine, we saw that Morris Wolf came to Vancouver around 1919. And he was one of those stories of immigration from Europe to the United States. And his story, if any, you know, as you've read through it, is obviously one that's pretty amazing, as he came through Ellis Island. Again, a theme that we haven't really had in any of our nominations with any of the figures, that American immigrant story in the early 20th century. And Morris, eventually working in a box factory, made his way to Portland, where he had to learn English and eventually start to figure out how he was going to make a life for himself. He eventually enlisted and was able to use that money from his enlistment to come over to Vancouver and establish a business. And so when looking at this site, we were really excited to see all of these multiple themes that we feel have not necessarily been highlighted. And potentially they could have been if we, you know, re-examine some sites on the register. But there's multiple themes here when it comes to Morris Wolf directly that have not been necessarily highlighted or discussed in nominations to the register that are pretty significant to their story. And then Morris went on from, you know, an initial location to move into this location and build an additional business that was on top of an auto supply and other businesses that he already had. And from there, Wolf's became a mainstay and really a very prominent piece in the history of Vancouver and in just the minds of individuals. If you, you know, if anyone, you know, goes to look at any of the sites that reminisce about the history of Vancouver, you can't get too far without seeing photos of different Wolf building, you know, noted by people. And then eventually the Wolf family, you know, his son, Les, and another son went on to be civically minded, join the city council and do many other things in the community. And so Morris's story alone is quite significant. And in addition to his narrative, this building was a site where he was able to bring in other business owners. And as time grew, we saw in this 13 block area, a number of different Jewish community leaders come in and establish themselves and contribute to the community. And so this was kind of the original site of the growing population of Jewish leaders in the community. And then Mel Shevick eventually moved in. And over time, as Wolf's business transitioned out, Mel's business took over the entire site. And as Mel Shevick grew his business, he also grew his influence. He eventually joined the Chamber of Commerce. He was very instrumental in the push for growing Vancouver in the 1950s. I'm sure some of you saw some of the quotes about what he viewed Vancouver was going to be, which may sound very reminiscent of what people think at times Vancouver would be today. You know, this very high-minded and excited enthusiasm about the growth of the city. And then in addition, he eventually moved into the city council, and he was on the city council during two very important events for the city of Vancouver. One was the construction of the second span of the Interstate Bridge, and then also during the period of urban renewal, when the downtown landscape really shifted and changed. And Mel Shevick was right in the middle of that story and that history and an instrumental figure. And then towards the end of his career running the business in downtown, he was instrumental in establishing all of the presence that we see with the Vancouver Downtown Association and the other advocacy groups that try to promote business and growth in the downtown area. And so really, Morris Wolf and Melvin Shevick have left an indelible mark on downtown Vancouver, and this building really significantly represents that. And then again, ties to a significant community of Jewish leaders that we've had in Vancouver for quite some time, and that the story is just now having the opportunity to unfold for our community and now can be recognized as this building is registered on or nominated to the register.
Any further questions on the part of commission for the applicant? I'd like to say that in addition to Wolf's Radio and Electronics, or Electric, that morphed into Wolf's Home Center that was at the corner of Broadway and Fourth Plain. And the last iteration was out in the Van Mall area. And Morris Wolf himself remained active in the business until the 1980s. And Brad indicated that Mr. Wolf had immigrated from Europe. It was Poland in particular. And so that was the nation of his birth in pre-World War I times. Another one, if you look at the picture on the left, you can see where we have shoes. And that was Kessler's Shoe Shop. And Max Kessler was another member of the Jewish Fraternity of Merchants in downtown Vancouver. And his head salesman was a gentleman by the name of Hornstein, two of whose sons went on to illustrious law practices in Vancouver, and a third became the business manager of Vancouver School District. And in addition, if you look closely at the picture, you'll see where it says loan office. And that was the embryonic start of American Music Company, which was located both on Evergreen and Main Street, just near the Kiggins Theater. And brothers Dan and Ken Golden opened up that store, and Melvin's Men's Shop continued in operation until about 1990. And I recall distinctly that in 1972, Mel Shevick opened my first charge account at his shop, and that throughout the 80s and 90s provided my suits and ties, and some of which I think I still have. Mel Shevick was a giant, and Brad, I was really glad to hear you mention that he had been an elected member of the city council at the time of the second bridge across the Columbia River, as well as the construction of Interstate 5. So it's a really significant building, and one architectural point that I'd like to make is that inside that building there is a mezzanine, and so it's not all on one floor. And the little shop that's a tailor shop now, Shirley Bates had for a long time, and that was Melvin's tuxedo shop. And probably just about every young man who went to prom between the end of the Second World War and 1990 rented a tuxedo from Melvin, including me for my wedding. So it's a very memorable building. I have great memories of all those guys. And Brad, one of the interesting thing is that even though downtown Vancouver had a sizable Jewish community that was not only involved in business, but also the professions, including law and medicine, that in those days there was no temple in Clark County. And so all those guys, including the Weinsteins from Vancouver Furniture, they all attended Temple Beth Shalom in Portland. And so it's very nostalgic for me to see this nomination, and I'm very pleased with the depth of which you researched those founding fathers of downtown commerce. Thank you very much. Any further HPC members with questions or comments for the applicant? I hope that didn't amount to an ex parte conflict of interest, but I just felt compelled to share it with everyone. Okay, we'll now open public comment period related specifically to Melvin's Men's Shop, Wolf Radio, and Electric Building. And Jackie, would you please see if there are any members of our constituency who are interested in participating in this conversation?
Of course. So for attendees using their computer or WebEx, if you'd like to speak, please utilize the raised hand icon. You can do this by clicking the participant button. Staff will only acknowledge those attendees during the public comment period who have raised their hand by selecting the hand icon. When you are acknowledged, you will be unmuted.
I don't hear any requests, Jackie.
Nope, I don't see any hands.
Okay, at this time, the public hearing is now closed and the commission will deliberate. The commission must make findings. They either agree with staff's findings on the criteria or make specific comments on any finding. So, and if we would now have time for members of the commission to make their comments. Seeing none, I will now accept a motion, including the finding. Please say your name when making a motion and second so staff can capture it for the record.
This is Michelle. So I would make a motion that we place the Melvin's Men's Shop Wolf Building on the Clark County Historic Register.
Thank you, Michelle. Is there a second?
This is Greg. I'll second.
Thank you, Greg. Jackie, would you please take a roll call vote to approve this motion?
Yep. Don Trost?
Aye.
Andrew Gregg?
Aye.
Julie Vaughn?
Aye.
Greg Fuse?
Yes.
Michelle Kapitanovich.
Aye.
Okay, we have a 5-0.
I'm pleased to report that Melvin's Men's Shop and Wolf Radio and Electric has been added to the register. Thank you, everybody. And at this time, I'd like to invite Sean Denniston to reclaim the chairmanship.
Oh, not quite yet.
No? Let me look here. I'm sorry. I'm at the end of my script.
Andy, we moved some things around, so we don't have any committee updates or announcements. I don't think any committees are active right now. Sally's not here, so the first two under old business, we're going to table right till next month or next meeting. So we're on to the formation of a subcommittee to respond to the SEPA comments. And that's the one Sean still wants to be recused on.
Understood.
And Andy, I just have one follow-up comment. So typically on these nominations, the chair signs, but, you know, since Chair Denniston wasn't, you know, had some involvement in these, look for these nominations. I'll send these to you for your signature here in the next week or so.
I'll be pleased to do that, Mark. Thank you very much. All right. Well, then, so we have the formation of the subcommittee to respond to the SEPA comment period for the Providence Academy. And Jackie, am I correct in assuming that Sean is recusing himself from the formation of this committee?
Correct. Yes. So I've moved Sean to the attendee as he is recusing himself from this discussion, and you can continue to chair.
All right. Then I guess we're going to ask for volunteers from the commission to participate.
Hold on. Andy, we got Sean's raising his hand, so I just want to see if I've misunderstood something. Hold on one second. Sean, I'm unmuting you.
Well, I just want to offer public comment on this agenda item when we come to public comment.
Okay, got it.
Will do. Okay, so we're going to be winging it here a little bit, so bear with me, please. So about the formation of the subcommittee to respond to the SEPA comment period for Providence Academy and the parameters for that subcommittee. Sean, is it your intent to make your comments before the subcommittee members identify themselves or after?
It can happen at any time. My comments are about the substance of what the subcommittee would be recommending. As I understand it, the commission will be voting to form a subcommittee and then authorizing that subcommittee to offer comment on the city's SEPA process in case it comes up between commission meetings, and so there's not time for the full commission to take action. So my public comment would just be the sorts of things that should be in, I feel, should be in the commission's response to the SEPA proceedings.
Well, then I'd like to invite you to go ahead and outline those elements so that folks who are considering volunteering will know the scope and sequence of the work. How about that?
Sure. I'd be happy to. So thank you very much, okay. Vice Chair Greg. I sent a document to the commission, and I appreciate you giving me the chance to address the commission. And this, when we go through the SEPA process, when the commission and the city goes through the SEPA process, there will be the opportunity to comment. And I think the big thing that will come back on that is the issue of mitigation. And so the document that I have provided really includes a series of mitigation measures that I think are high value and reasonable for the sorts of projects that are being proposed for this site. And I hope that you would consider them. They fall into two categories. One category is what I would consider minimum mitigation measures. I don't think that any any credible mitigation for the adverse impact of demolition and development on this site could go below these measures, and those include listing what remains of Providence Academy on the Clark County Heritage Register, especially since everyone, including the City of Vancouver itself, has recommended that this happen, and then full documentation of anything that is lost through either demolition or the construction of new buildings on the site. And then I've included a series of what I consider high-value mitigation measures. These are completely reasonable measures that I think should be recommended and included as in part of any mitigation process under the CEPA process. These I wouldn't consider to be comprehensive. I think that these are high-value and reasonable. There are certainly other mitigation measures that could be proposed and that make a lot of sense. But I think that these really would bring a lot to mitigating the adverse impact, again, of demolition and construction. I'm happy to answer any questions about any of these. I appreciate you taking the time to consider my feedback on this, and I wish you Godspeed in giving really good feedback to the city as part of the CEPA process. Thank you.
Colleagues, is anyone interested in serving to remind myself, the subcommittee would be responding during the comment period that may or may not take place or during a meeting time, or it could take place and have a window of opportunity that would open and close between meetings for us. Sean, would you say that's correct?
Yes.
Okay. So it's that this would be a subcommittee who would be called upon potentially to respond in the weeks in between a Clark County Historic Preservation Commission meeting. So there'd be a rapid response element to this subcommittee.
So, Andy Dontrost, I'm willing to serve on such a committee. Mm-hmm. My interest goes to, or my experience goes to work nationally on preserving historic properties throughout the country, mainly focused on major wars of the United States, admittedly. Not structures so much as places. But nonetheless, I do think, I feel very strongly that what's happened at the Academy has been unreasonable and that we should make a strong statement. I did read Sean's letter to the commission and thought it was very well presented, and I'm very supportive of his recommendations. So that's where I stand at the moment. And if I can add some value to the committee, I'm willing to serve on it. I'm also willing to stand aside if other people want to do it. I seem to be volunteering a lot, and I don't want to dominate this when other members are willing and interested. So you can put my name in the hopper, and I'm willing to serve or to stand aside depending on what others want to do.
Thank you, Don. Follow up. This is Michelle. I'm going to follow up with Don's comments. I'm willing to help with that too. So you can put my name into the hopper.
Thank you, Michelle. Just for the record, I was thinking that since Sean is going to recuse himself in future meetings when the Providence Academy groups are presenting, that I would volunteer to serve on the next item about historic overlay. But it may be a good idea if I do not serve on the Providence Academy subcommittee so that I can remain impartial when I serve in Sean's stead as the chairman of the hearing. Otherwise, I'd volunteer.
This is Michelle. Is it okay to have two people, or should we try to get one more person on the subcommittee?
It is okay to have two.
Okay.
In fact, if Don and Michelle, it may be easier to have two, or maybe, I don't mean easier, but I mean more expedient to have two, if you have to respond quickly.
Okay.
So how about if we do this? I have on my notes, Michelle and Don, and there is a potential that Thaley might like to serve on the subcommittee too. So we do have two people. Thank you, Don, and thank you, Michelle, for volunteering for the subcommittee to respond to SEPA comment period on the Providence Academy and the parameters for that subcommittee. So thank you. So Jackie, may we move on to the next item?
Yeah, we can.
Okay, the formation of a subcommittee to comment on the Vancouver Heritage Overlay District. And Sean, I'd invite your comment on this too, because it's my sense that this dovetails with former Historic Preservation Chair Sarah Fox, who's now on the Vancouver City Council, who are looking to provide comment to the Vancouver City Council regarding the Historic Overlay District's code and how the Historic Preservation Commission might become more active and meaningful participants in the consideration of activities that are taking place there. Is that correct, Sean?
They are definitely linked together. Just as a point of clarity on the prior action, doesn't the commission need to vote to authorize the subcommittee to submit comment for the SEPA, so that it becomes an official act of the commission?
We could certainly do that. In my notes, it didn't say that, and I don't recall having to authorize subcommittee beyond people participating. But would there be a motion to authorize the? I see what you're saying, because the SEPA subcommittee may be responding outside of a Historic Preservation Commission meeting. And for the record, the the Vancouver Heritage Overlay District subcommittee may be in the same position. So we could do that. Would there be a motion to authorize the subcommittee to take care of the SEPA comment period?
Sure, I'll move to create the subcommittee to respond to the SEPA comments.
Thank you. Thank you, Julie. Mm-hmm. Is there a second?
This is Greg. I'll second.
Thank you, Greg. It's been moved and seconded that the Historic Preservation Commission authorize the formal formation of a subcommittee to respond to the SEPA comment period of the Providence Academy and parameters for that subcommittee. All in favor? I think it's just a voice vote. All aye. In favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Aye. Jackie, let the record reflect that it's a unanimous approval to authorize this committee.
Okay.
I have volunteered myself to be on the subcommittee to comment on the Vancouver Historic Overlay District. This would maybe involve having a conversation with Vancouver City Council members and quite possibly testifying at a City Council meeting. And so would anybody else be interested in that activity?
This is Sean. I would be interested, since I don't have to recuse myself from this, it is a legislative act. I would definitely be interested, but as Don said, if there are other people who haven't been as active in subcommittees, I wouldn't want to supplant one of them.
Greg or Julie, would you be interested in serving on this subcommittee?
I'm sorry, not at this time.
Okay, thank you very much for considering it.
So, Andy, I think it might be useful to give the commission, we weren't able to give them a rundown of the discussion that the city council had on this topic of updating the code before, but we did form, I guess we did already form the subcommittee with you, me and Greg, and I thought that your take in our discussion on what happened at city council was very erudite. So would you mind letting the... kind of summarizing what happened at the city council meeting for the rest of the commission so that they understand kind of what's going on with this process right now?
I will look if I think I have that in my sent box. So we'll see, see what we've got here. Yes. Okay. I have this comment. Would you like me to read my summary?
Yeah, I think that'd be great. It was good and concise.
Okay, it is, unusually. After reviewing the relevant parts of the city council meeting, it sounds as if the majority of members are willing to consider expanding the roles of commissions and advisory boards, but one councilor is not open to Clark County Historic Preservation Commission serving in a pilot program, and several want to survey the other existing groups. In addition, I sensed reticence on the part of a couple of councilors over liability and accountability issues. I propose that our code subcommittee remain active and prepare to respond to the city council's survey with answers that articulate the ways in which Clark County Historic Preservation Commission could make substantive decisions as opposed to providing input or feedback that is in an advisory capacity only. Next week, we are in a position to report to colleagues the content of former Clark County Historic Preservation Chair Sarah Fox's bold idea, the measured response her proposal received, and the vague prospects Vancouver City Councilors offered advisory boards and commissions. So that was my reply to you and Greg. So I think this is a subcommittee, unlike the SEPA subcommittee, that's going to have to respond here pretty soon, that the Heritage Overlay Code subcommittee is going to have to watch what City Council does and look for an opening to plead our case. Would you say that's about right, Sean?
I think that that's one option, and I think that that's what we should consider is what action we want to take. We could also take a proactive step.
We could write a letter to City Council and indicate our interest in doing this.
Yeah, I think that that's the other option, is that we could, you know, support the idea of reviewing the code, and I think we could state that we see a pressing need for it, specifically in the case of historic preservation, and we would be happy to be, you know, to participate in moving that process forward, just to kind of nudge it up their agenda. I know it is an item that is being considered for the City Council work plan. So that might help nudge it a little bit more toward the top.
Okay, well, maybe what we could do is draft a friendly letter to the City Council offering our services to review the overlay district and to enhance our role in decision making. So I'll put in my notes, draft a friendly letter. Maybe we could consult with former Chair Fox too. Okay. Thank you, Sean.
So I guess that's, do we need to take a motion to do that?
Oh, yes. Is there a motion to authorize the subcommittee?
This is Don. I move that we authorize the subcommittee to represent the full council with the City of Vancouver on the Heritage Overlay Code.
Thanks,
this is Michelle. I'll second that.
Thank you, Michelle. And we'll do a voice vote, Jackie. It's been moved and seconded that the Historic Preservation Commission authorize a subcommittee to comment on Vancouver Historic Overlay Code with Vancouver City Council in near future. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Jackie, let that let the record show that that was also unanimously approved.
Okay.
And now, Sean, it's my pleasure to turn the meeting over to you.
All right, thank you. So that concludes our old business and updates, which brings us to our next agenda item, which is new business, the January 6th HPC meeting. Jackie?
So as of now, we do not have any cases, unless Jason or Mark know of anything that has come in for them. So I just kind of wanted to check in and see if, with the holidays and all as well, I don't know how much is going on, whether or not we take a break in January and reconvene in February, but wanted to bring that up and see what the city staff had going as well.
Good evening, everyone. This is Jason Nortz. We do not have anything at this point in time that I'm aware of, the January 6th meeting, but that could change, but it likely will not.
So in the past, we have voted to cancel the January meeting pending, on the condition that no items are added to the docket. And so that is an available option for us this year as well. If we feel that there are issues that would need to be discussed in January, regardless of whether or not we have items on the docket, we could just go ahead and leave the meeting as planned. Are there any thoughts on either of those options?
I think what we've done historically makes sense. Sorry, go ahead.
Is there any chance that the SEPA comment period will be taking place between now and February? Our next meeting would be February 3rd. So is there any chance that the SEPA situation would require our attention?
Yeah, good question. Good question, Commissioner Gregg. It's an unknown at this point. The ball's in the developer's court as far as their application is sitting in a state of incompleteness, waiting on additional information we've required for the SEPA process. So until we actually receive something from them, we don't really have an idea of when that clock, okay, so to speak, would start. So, sorry.
I just wanted to be able to be of support for Don and Michelle in that interim time.
So I would entertain a motion to cancel the January meeting contingent on nothing being added to our docket.
So moved.
And that was Andy. Do we have a second?
I'll second. This is Julie.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Jackie, please let the record show that it has passed unanimously that we will cancel the January 6th HPC meeting contingent on nothing being added to our docket. If any projects do come through requiring our attention, then we will go ahead and have that meeting as scheduled currently.
Okay.
And that brings us to the end of our agenda. Is there anything else that we need to address before we adjourn?
Sean and I had an opportunity to show the flag today with Leadership Clark County. And Leadership Clark County is a program for young professionals and folks who are new to the area, who will probably be the movers and shakers in future. And they were interested in hearing about Clark County and Vancouver advisory boards and commission. And Sean did an exemplary job outlining our mission and scope of operations.
And Andy did an incredible job as well. So we were glad that we were able to respond and show. Jackie, I have a slightly streamlined version of our standard presentation, since our window was a little bit shorter on this, that I will send you when I get a chance.
Thank you.
All right. Hearing nothing else, we have completed our agenda and we are adjourned for our December meeting. I will see you all next year. Have a happy new year to everyone. Thank you so much for moving. And we actually ended before 2 hours. Thank you so much, everyone.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays. Bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
Thank you.